Tyler's Long One on RadioLeMans.com.
Well, since its very inception here at RadioLeMans.com, we've been very interested in the Nissan GT Academy, and the latest recipient of all of the backing that Nissan and PlayStation can give is Jan Mardenborough, who is sitting next to me at the moment. For those that don't know, take us through the early part. How did you get involved with the Nissan GT Academy, and how did you get to the stage of effectively being selected? Because it was a competition right from the very start.
Yeah, it's a competition held. It's the third year running now. It's been held. I saw an advert for it in January this year for this year's competition. And I thought I'd give it a quick go, see what it's like. The first part was an online time trial. So it was 6 weeks in one car, one track. The first week I just stuck at it, see what it was like, did it for a laugh. And I was top 50 in Europe. So I thought, okay, I'll stick with it, see where I come towards the end. About 4 weeks in, I thought, okay, I might have a good chance here. So I really sort of nailed myself down to my seat in my room, started really pumping out the times, and I was the top 20 from each EU country, went through to the national final. So I placed 10th, I think, in the UK and Ireland. So I was off to the national final at Brands Hatch.
Approximately then, how many laps do you think where was the, do you remember which track it was? Or was it 370, the car I seem to remember, a Nissan 370Z, and was the track Indianapolis by any chance?
The track was on the time trial, it was a made up track. So it was pretty hard track. The car was a Nissan 370Z. It was a really tough track.
About how many laps do you think that you put in overall there?
I put in about 4 hours a day for about 2 weeks. So I would say near to 800 laps.
Were you already a keen gamer, or was it the fact that you saw the ad that made you think, how hard can it be? I'll have a crack at it.
It was a bit of a both, really. I've always been a really keen gamer, especially simulation games with Gran Turismo and a load of other games. But Gran Turismo has always really stood out to me. It's been a really good game. It's the first ever game I've ever played when I was a young child. It was Gran Turismo 1. And it was a bit of both, sort of, okay, I'll give it a go. It's the competition. It's a competition. It's free to enter, so I might as well give it a good go. And here I am.
So at that point, were you playing on a joypad, or do you have a steering wheel and pedals set up? And, what made you think, obviously, as soon as you put in a decent time, it pushed you forward. But were you playing on a joypad at that point?
No, I bought myself a wheel for my 19th birthday, actually.
So you already had that? It wasn't like you had to rush out and do that to get involved?
Yeah, to be competitive on the online side of it, you have to have a wheel. There were some people using a joypad, but they're just sort of really dexterous, and I'm not that dexterous with the joypads. So, I was using a wheel and pedals.
So you get the idea. Oh, hello, I've put a time in that's quite decent here. What feelings do you have at that point? Do you think, oh, good heavens, I've got half a chance of this? Or do you think, oh my God, I've got half a chance of this? You know, are you excited? Are you scared? And what drives you forward from that point?
It's all three, really. Once you set a really good time, that time usually on the online side of it would say you set a time in the top 10. 3 hours down the line, you'd be 20th. It was that competitive, so you had to be on it every day, just sort of pumping out the times. Even though if you didn't go faster one day of 3 hours sitting in your room for one day, sort of drilling out times, and you don't go faster, you have to do it the next day. So it's once you get a really good time, you think yes, but you have to go again. So there's never really a rest point.
Was there any time where you thought, I've been at this now for a couple of weeks, I thought I was going to be all right with this, but now I'm sitting down in 25th position or 46th position, I was 13th this morning. Right, that's it. To hell with it. I'm walking away from it.
Yeah, I would say about the fourth weekend, I couldn't get into the top. I think it was 30th, and I couldn't break into the top 20. There was just one corner that was really hard, and I just couldn't do it right just to get a good time. And there was moments where I thought, okay, just screw it. I'm just going to sit down and watch telly. But fortunately, I did sort of stick at it and got every single corner pretty well, and pumped out a good time.
I'm amazed, in some respect, at the kind of effort that you've told us that you've had to put in, and the dedication, if you like, just shows to me how really, really competitive the whole process was from the very start. We'll come back to that later on, because I'll be interested to know if you think that helped you when you came on to the real world driving later on. The lap that you ultimately put in to get you into the national final, was that, did you know when you put that lap in, that's the one, that is the one, there's nothing better than that from me?
Yeah, there was a lot. The last corner was a long right-hander, and there was a long straight onto the pitch straight, and once I finished this long right-hander, and you can have like, you have like a ghost car, so your previous best time, you can sort of see it on track. And once I was on the street, I was flicked back to chase cam, so you can see your car, and I looked behind, and the ghost car was quite a far distance behind. So I had my foot on the accelerator, and then I was just fist pumping myself, going, yes, come on. And once I set the time, I just thought, there's no way I can go that any quicker than that.
And where did that put you at that exact point in time?
I think it put me 9th, and one person, I think 3 days towards the end of the competition, put me into 10th. But I was just so pleased that I got down to a good time, and I was in the top 10, really.
What view do you talk about switching views? What view do you drive from? The onboard view? Because I know a lot of people who I see doing driving games drive from the above and behind the car, which I just can't get my head around at all. But they tell me, and some of them are real-world drivers as well, they tell me they like to see how the car's moving around. So where do you drive from?
I drive on the bonnet camera, right. So you can see every... I think for hot lapping, anyway, it's a lot better. You can see a lot more of the road. For like online racing against other people, I just use the in-car view, just because I'm a bit of a freak like that, really, just trying to get it as realistic as possible.
Traditionalist, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. So there you were then. You've put in this lap, and it's now clearly dawned on you that you are going to be going through to the next round of the competition. So at that moment, as you're watching the time tick down and you're still sitting there in 10th place, what are you thinking? What are your mates and your family thinking that you've dedicated 4 hours a day of your life over a month or 6 weeks to this? What was going on in your life at that time?
Well, I was on a gap year from university, so I had quite a lot of spare time on my hands. Leading up to the competition ending, I think the competition ended at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was never going to stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning watching a timer count down, so I just went to bed. My family, my mum especially, she was sort of really on board from the word go, really, when I told her I was going to be entering the competition. So was my dad, my brother, and some of my friends. They were sort of like, oh, this... it's just some online thing. Nothing really good's going to come out of it. So they were pretty... I had some banter with them. But yeah, once I found out I won, I was through to the nationals. So I was ecstatic, really.
And then the realisation must have dawned on you, oh, I've got to go and do this again. And it's effectively a knockout competition at that point. It's sudden death. How much did you know before you went to the national finals about what you were going to be taking part in, and what was your mindset at that point? Were you already thinking further forward?
Leading up to the national final, I thought my weakest area was the actual gaming side of it, because we had four areas we had to work on. The first, we split up into 2 days, the nationals. The first day was just purely gaming. So there was 22 competitors, and only 10 would go through to the next day. And the first day was just gaming. It was hot lapping around three tracks with three different cars. And you'd get points for how high up the leaderboard you would be. And I think on the first day I placed second or so.
Now, was that a surprise to you, given that you thought the gaming side of things wasn't your strength?
Yeah, completely. I was completely blown away, really. There was a lot of people, I didn't really know the people going to the national finals, and a lot of them, I found out after, were professional gamers and really good gamers on Gran Turismo. I had no idea of this while I was doing it. So once I saw that, a lot of people were just sort of going off the track and making stupid mistakes and silly mistakes, and I just sort of drove at 8 tenths really just to try to stick it on the blacktop. And I sort of got through to the second day.
Now, there will be people listening to this hearing you say that the majority of the people that were professional gamers will have gone, eh? Professional gamers? What's he talking about? But what, these are people who earn a living or at least have a reputation in the gaming world, and that is what they do.
Yeah, sure. There was at least two people I knew there that were got paid to basically play racing games, and I only knew this after. So I think if I would have known that leading up to the national finals, I would have been a bit more nervous about it and sort of looking over my shoulder to see where they were placing. So I'm sort of glad I didn't really know anything.
Ignorance was bliss in that respect. Yeah. So you come second, which is a massive boost to you on that first day of the national finals. So what happened on day two?
Day two was split up into four categories. We had game inside again. Then we had real-life driving in a Nissan 370Z around a coned course. Media interview skills and a fitness test. So I was leading up to the nationals. I was doing quite a bit of fitness because we had an email through telling us what was going to happen at the nationals. So I sort of tried to prepare as much as I can. I didn't really want to go to the nationals being underprepared and then not going through and then looking myself in the mirror and saying, you could have done better, but you didn't. So I just worked really hard leading up to it.
In terms of the real world driving in the 370Z, what driving experience had you done before? Did you have a driving license? You were a young lad. Not everybody gets into a car at 17 like they used to do in my day, which was years ago, because it's a very different world out there and it's damned expensive for insurance and such like. So were you already driving? Did you have a driving license? Had you done any karting in your past? What experience did you have when you went on to that second day and of the national finals?
Well I had no track day experience. I had my own car. I owned it for about 8 months leading up at that time. But it was, compared to the Nissan, it was three times more powerful than Nissan was. So sort of stepping into it, it was a bit of a, whoa, this is quick here. And I've never driven an automatic car before. Uh-huh. It had like flappy paddle gearbox. Yeah. And I presume
that wasn't so much of a problem from playing games, though, was it?
No, it wasn't, because on my personal own wheel, it's got some buttons behind the wheel, so I was pretty at home at that. Sometimes I did sort of flick the indicator stalk on, and the windscreen wipers got turned on at some point, so it was a bit embarrassing coming out the car after that, but it went really well.
So, you can tell us, what was your first car? Was it the usual little front-wheel drive hatchback or something like that?
My first personal own car was, it's an old BMW E30 318. But nice. The first car I actually ever was insured to drive up with was my mum's Hyundai Coupe. It was pretty smart, sort of in school, sixth form, and everyone else has got these small Euro hatchbacks. Yeah. And I've got this quite nice sports car. So I had to do quite a lot of drives down to Greg's at lunchtime with my mates in the back. So
I like the idea of you having the 318, though, because that obviously rear-wheel drive car, and most of the small hatchbacks now are front-wheel drive, and at least you've had some rear-wheel drive experience. Sorry, went off on a tangent there. Let's get back to driving on the track around the coned course. big step up. You realise you're in with a shout though at this point, so the pressure is on straight away there. How did you feel you'd done on day two? Did you know you were going to get through, or did you not have a scooby?
Well, day two, the first event was Game Inside again. It was head-to-head this time, split screen, and I won the tournament somehow. But it was three. It was head-to-head. We had three races, three different tracks, three different cars, and I won that side of it. And then straight onto the driving part. The Cone course was pretty tricky. It was in a set in a car park, and the last corner was a long right-hander, and the instructor was Chris Ward, and he sat next to me, and he said on the first run, right, floor it for the right-hander and try to get the back out. And I sort of, this is the first time I've ever power slid a car before, and it was an amazing moment, sort of going sideways and knowing what to do. Really, it was pretty instinctive, and Gran Turismo sort of does help with that side of it. You felt pretty realistic, sliding a car and how to control it, and we had to stop in a coned box. Mm-hmm. And once I started, I was sort of, my hands were shaking, I was sort of smiling, grinning ear to ear like an idiot, and got out of the car, and I just said, I want to do that for a job. It was wicked.
Really lost you to drifting completely there, then. Absolutely. So then you had fitness and media. Now, you said you'd worked on your fitness a little bit, but I talk to you now, and we've talked before on the telephone, and I think your media skills are very good. But how did you even try to practice your media skills, and how can you do that? And what sort of, again, what was in your mind when you were going into that part of the test?
Well, the media skills, I wasn't really bothered about it, really. I just sort of took it how it is. My dad has done a lot of interviews in the past with his football, and I've always been around in the house while he's been giving interviews, and I sort of felt comfortable going into an interview situation. Basically, it was just sort of talking about yourself, so that can't be too hard. So I just sort of took it how it is, really.
Would you describe yourself normally, and would your friends describe yourself normally as an outgoing person rather than a shy person?
I'm a bit of both, really. I'm sort of shy with people I don't really know, but with my friends, I'm completely out there. So interviewing me, they're there for me, really. They're there to interview me, so I wasn't really put off about that.
And the fitness side of things, you'd prepared for that, because that wasn't going to let you down, and that was something that you could make a difference with. And I think, again, we'll come on to this later, it says a lot about your mindset. So you went there, you must have felt kind of okay about that.
Yeah, I did feel really okay about it, apart from sort of midway through. The first part of the game inside, I had about three bottles of this fizzy Lucozade, and I drank all three of them. And it was a hot day that day, and we had to do a bleep test, and all this Lucozade inside my stomach didn't feel good after.
Sloshing around a bit, was it?
Yeah, it was. I didn't do as good as I thought I'd do. I think the Lucozade is to blame for that. And so I had a trip to the toilet midway through, and yeah, it didn't go very well. But I think I placed third overall in the fitness. I was a bit disappointed about that, really, looking back at all the fitness work I did leading up to it. But I didn't really sort of let it drag on my mind, really. That was the last activity, so I was sort of glad everything was over now, and I could sort of sit down and wait for the results to happen.
How did you feel at that point? You'd come out of the fitness, you thought at that point, maybe that was the first part of the day where you thought you hadn't done your absolute best. So you sat down there, and what was going through your mind? Were you thinking, I'm through, I might be somewhere near, or I've blown it with that fitness thing?
I'd done really good. There was a few people coming up to me and said, oh, Jan, you're definitely through to the top two. But I didn't really believe them. I sort of sat on the fence. I didn't want to believe it any more than 50%, because if I did and I wasn't going through, it would be just a huge letdown, a huge blow. So I just sat on the fence, really. Once they called my name out, I was just, yes, come on. It was a really good feeling.
So that was the national side of things. You're listening to RadioLeMond.com. I'm John Heindorf, and alongside me, the latest member of the Nissan GT Academy, Jan Mardenborough. From that point onwards, everything has happened relatively quickly, and it's been very intense, certainly, everything that you've done. You then went through as the as one of the national selections. So, in some respects, the pressure gets ramped up, because it's not just about you. You're representing the country, young man. And you went forward to the boot camp and the next stage, which is no less challenging.
Yeah, the boot, there was a bit more pressure added to it. I had a teammate, which was James. It was sort of nice sort of meeting other people from different countries that have got the same interest in a game and with driving as well. So I was looking forward to meeting other people. Finally, at the airport in France, because we went to Le Mans, meeting up with all these, the Germans, the Italians, the French, the Spanish, the Portuguese. It was a really good day. Enjoyed the bus trip down to Le Mans, and got to watch Lucas Ordonez race his first Le Mans race. And it was I really enjoyed that. It was really good.
What did you think about the atmosphere of the event of Le Mans itself?
It was incredible. The sound, I've never been to a racetrack where you have to cover your ears as a car starts up and starts revving its engine. It was just amazing. The machinery that was there, it was just so special. It was walking on the grid, the pit walk, while there was cars wheeling out to get on the grid slot, and it was just organised chaos. It was just cars here, there and everywhere trying to get past, cars beeping at you, guys telling you to get off the racetrack, and other guys saying, no, stay where you are, and it was a pretty funny experience.
We haven't talked about your interests in, if you even had any, in motorsport before you entered the Nissan GT Academy. Were you a motorsport fan before you took this opportunity to make it your business, as it were?
I was always interested in cars from a very young age. Just these little matchbox cars, I used to play along the floor with them. Motorsport wise, I was a big fan around 7 years old, 8 years old, of British touring cars. I used to watch that religiously every weekend, and I never really watched F1. I remember watching one F1 race when I was little, I can remember, and Schumacher won, obviously. But I was just a big fan of cars, just a car lover, really, and cars driving fast is sort of the best of both worlds, really, sort of cars and then going really quick. Motorsport is sort of the key.
So let's take you back to this fantastic, 8-9 months that you've had of this year. So you went to Le Mans. Lucas Ordonez, as you say, one of the first winners of the GT Academy. Not only racing at Le Mans in a prototype, but ends up standing on the podium in the Orica Nissan. So that's a phenomenal result. And at that point, do you think, oh my God, this is all really real? And that could be me in a couple of years' time.
I was just thinking it was just great for GT Academy, just having a gamer, an ordinary guy who went to school, and then now he's on the podium of a Le Mans race, 24-hour race. It was just sort of speechless, really, how you can make that jump without sort of doing the traditional way of karting. Then you go to different series up into, I don't know, Le Mans style. So it was sort of a different route, and I was really sort of privileged to be there at Le Mans and then heading off to Silverstone. So I was psyched. I was super excited.
Did you get a chance to have a chat with Lucas and find out about his experience? Because obviously, again, we've met him a lot. I was there the day he got crowned. Smashing lad, and I can see some interesting parallels between you two. He took some time off from his studies to get involved in the gaming side of things, and again, a lad who's very driven. Did you manage to get a chat with him and sort of find out a little bit more about him?
I never got to chat to him one-on-one at Le Mans. There was a time when we were going out for the restaurant, and there was a whole bunch of us, 12 contestants. He was talking to us, and he said, every day, try and improve on your performance at Silverstone. He said, just keep on improving and don't sort of sit back and say, okay, I'm doing pretty well here. Mm. Just try and improving every single event you do, just trying to improve yourself. So I sort of took that on board, really, and the American finalists were there as well. And they said the same thing, so I thought, okay, they can't be right, they can't be wrong. Yeah. So I sort of took all their good words on board and carried it through to Silverstone.
So then you come back, you go to Silverstone, and all of a sudden it gets really competitive because, all right, it's all very nice being pally with these guys who you've been hanging about with for a few days at Le Mans. It's all been a bit of a jolly, but it's man against man at this point, and somebody's got to be a loser and somebody's got to be a winner. Were you able to make that switch in your mind that says, right, all these guys, nice people, but I've got to beat them?
Yeah, everyone had the same mindset. There wasn't any sort of people there sort of trying to put you off and say the wrong things. I don't think there was none of that. We all had the same interest. We all really wanted to win. And we all knew that this was a competition to be have a professional racing driving contract. So there was a lot at stake. Everyone knew they weren't going to take any prisoners. So there wasn't really any awkward moments about that. On the track, everyone was on it, really. Yeah, everyone sort of performed really well throughout the whole 4 days at Silverstone. It was, I don't know whether they call it boot camp, because it was sort of really...
Was it harder than you expected? Was the experience of being, I mean, you were living away from home, and it was competitive pretty much every moment that you were there?
Yeah, living away from home, it wasn't. I didn't really think about home at all, really. The time I was there, it was just cars every morning, 7 o'clock, getting a car around the racetrack. So it was perfect. But yeah, it was ultra competitive. It was the hardest thing was book, definitely the fitness side of it. The army guys, it's guy Ben. Army guy, he sort of tortured us, really. He was so cruel. The stuff that he said to us while we were struggling to do some press ups and run up a hill was really funny, but really sort of cruel at the same time. So, yeah, look.
Did you find that motivational? And did that make you think, I'm not letting him talk to me like that, I'm going to try harder? Or did it make you think, why do I bother?
I was trying hard anyway. He said to us, right, at the army boot camp, he said, in everything I say to do, give 100%. And I did. So there wasn't a point where he was saying something and I would sort of think, okay, I'll show you. I was already on it straight away. But the stuff that you were saying to the other competitors did make you had not to laugh. If he saw you laughing, he would punish you. So I tried to stay on the other side of the fence, really, not get on his bad side.
Smart move. So tell me a little bit about the driving. You get in a variety of cars in situations that you've never been in before. It's all brand new to you. Did you feel at home straight away? Did you think, again, as you had in the national finals, you think, oh, I've got a chance here? Or were you not looking that far ahead? Were you just sort of looking and concentrating on each individual task that you were given?
I think I was concentrating on each individual task that was given. They didn't tell us at all what was going to happen during the day. So 10 minutes before we had to do something, they would say, okay, suit up, get your suits on, gloves on, helmet, and you're going to be doing so-and-so around the Stowe circuit in a GTR. You had no idea what you were doing, so you always had to be ready, prepared for anything, really. But once I got in the car, I was sort of at home. The most at home I felt was right at the end, when there was no one in the passenger seat. Having an instructor with you sometimes can be a bit sort of unnerving, really, because you're always thinking, is he going to be really critical of my driving, and am I going to feel really bad at the end when I get out of the car? So sometimes it was a bit daunting.
Intimidating, maybe?
Yes, I would say intimidating. So the first time getting to a GTR, from stepping from a 370 to a GTR, you think, okay, the step's a bit, it's going to be a bit of a baby step. It's not, it's completely different. Four-wheel drive compared to rear-wheel drive, completely different driving style. The weight, GTR's a lot heavier. the power difference, that thing was just insane down the straights. It was...
Yeah, but you want one, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I want a GTR.
Black edition. Thank you very much, please.
Yeah. Yeah, they're an incredible machine.
So, again, long story short, and we're cutting four days down into a few minutes here, but you come out of there, and again, you're standing there on the final afternoon stroke evening waiting to find out what the situation is. Again, how did you feel at that point? If you'd gone home then, would you have thought, I have given it my best and I've had a great time and, okay, I haven't won, but at least I know that I've done my best? Or would you have been tremendously disappointed because you thought, I've left something in the locker and I could have done better?
I would have been tremendously disappointed if I didn't win. I know that's a sort of a bit of an egoish thing to say, but I didn't want to lose. I didn't know I was going to win. I didn't feel I had a chance, but I just didn't want to lose. I didn't want to think about, oh, you've taken part, that matters. I wanted to win, but I didn't think I could win. So if I didn't win, it would have been terrible. I just didn't want to think about it, so it didn't really pass through my mind.
I said we'd come back to a couple of things, and one of them was your dedication right at the very start, that you blocked out 3 or 4 hours of your day every day to ensure that your time was good enough to get you through and start the process here. That clearly shows a focus, a certain state of mind that you have when you want something, that you're prepared to put yourself into it heart and soul. That must have helped you when you were at Silverstone.
Yeah, I sort of go by the mindset, if you're going to do something, do it 100% of your ability. So the online time trial, if you're going to enter it, you might as well stick at it and do good at it, rather than sort of Mickey Mouse entering and messing about and not taking it seriously. So and that sort of helps, because I am really competitive in sort of everything, really. I think that sort of extends back to my brother in football. So that did definitely help me at Silverstone. I'm not sort of competitive where I start to aggravate other competitors. I'm sort of really competitive in myself. I'm quite self-critical on my performance, which did help me, and it did at certain points. But
there's a danger you can be overcritical to yourself, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. There were some one or two events where I thought I could have done better, and it did get me down a few times. But talking to Johnny Herbert, our British mentor, he sort of bigged me up, and he said, just don't worry about what's happened has happened. You just got to be 100% positive for the next event.
The other thing that you mentioned early on was when you were talking to Lucas Ordonez, and his advice was try and improve every day, try and improve every time you go out on the track. And you clearly took that to heart, because talking to Johnny and the other guys who were judging, one of the things that they said about you right at the start, and I was at the trials a couple of times during your 4 days there, was that you had shown constant improvement. Did you feel that? And was that something that you could say, well, in my own mind, if I'm honest, maybe I didn't do quite as well as I could have done there, but I think I'm improving generally?
Obviously, the first 2 days, I didn't really think I was improving, because those 2 days, I did have certain bad events those couple of days. So I didn't really think I was improving that much. Only the last two, I thought I really stepped it up.
Was there a single turning point that you can sort of put your finger on and say, oh, it was when I was doing blah and it was wet, or when I was in this car and I did such and such?
Personally, I would say it was the single seaters, where I thought I really myself stepped up a jump.
That's interesting, because that's exactly what the judges said.
Really? that's a good sign.
That's true. When I was there that day, and they say, and while you guys were going around, we were standing talking, and, you know, and I said, because we've never had a British winner before, you know, how's it going? Who's the favourite? Oh, there's a couple of lads who are doing pretty well. What about the British lad? So, no, he's there or thereabouts. And then when I spoke to Johnny later on, he says, no, he's really stepped it up in that. Now he's really got us looking at him.
Yeah, I would say Johnny Herbert helped me a lot in the single seaters. He gave me a really good couple of words of advice to try out. We had four or five sessions of driving the single seaters. And after the first two, I said to him, I'm struggling with the breaks, and these guys are breaking way so much later than me. And he said, just when you go out there again for your third session, go out there and on a straight bit of road, just slam on the brakes until the tires sort of lock up. And I said, why? And he said, so you know next time when you go into a faster corner, how hard you can brake before the tires lock up. And I sort of took his advice. Next session, I come out and I was second fastest. Yeah. And I just got more confident with the car, the gearbox. He just said, one of the sessions I come in, he said to me, why are you shifting up so early? You can go a lot further than that. And I go, the light's telling me to shift up. And he said, no, just thrash it. And the next session I did it again. I think I was quickest in one of them. So, he helped me quite a bit.
Yeah, Johnny Herbert, mechanical sympathy. Two words that perhaps don't go together. Sorry, Johnny. So you get to the end of it. So by then, the confidence is high. You must think, I'm in with a shot here. But really and truly, what was it like when your name came out as the winner?
There was a huge pause when Eddie Irvine announced me as the winner. It felt for ages. I was just standing there, no one was saying anything. And then the crowd cheered and then I cheered. But I only thought I had a chance, not of winning, but had a chance, was after the qualifying session we had on the national circuit for the final race. And Johnny Herbert opened the door and he said, oh, you're P1. And that's the only time I thought, okay, I've got a good shot here. And once Eddie Irvine announced me as the winner, I've got that moment in my mind for the rest of my life. It was wicked.
Slightly negative part of it, one or two of your competitors since the event's over have been somewhat ungracious in things that have said about how the competition was run and the fact that you won it. I'll go back to what I said before about constant improvement, because that came through very much from all the conversations I had. How do you deal with that in your mind going forward?
Well,
does it disappoint you, having lived with these guys for a little while?
It did. It sort of put a bit of sour taste in my mouth. And looking back at it a couple of days after the event and some of the things people were saying, competitors, it did sort of put me down a bit. But after a while, the judges and Eddie Irvine chose me because I improved the most. They said I had the most potential to do well, and I might not have been the quickest from the off, but I improved quite a bit, and I thought myself I improved a bit as well. So
how did you do in that? You qualified on pole for the last race. How did you do in the final race?
Yeah, I won.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so after about a week or so, I just sort of took it how it is. They're going to be disappointed. People, past competitors are going to be disappointed because they didn't win. So I sort of just took it on a chin and I did my best, and that's all I can do. And whatever happens to other people, I can't help that. So I wasn't too bothered after about a week or two.
Good answer. Very good answer, and well thought out in your mind. You've sort of rationalised that very well. You're listening to RadioLeMond.com. I'm John Hindorf. This is the Tyler's Long One interview. Graham not able to be with us today, so I'm stepping in to do that. And we're with Jan Mardenborough, who is the third winner of the Nissan GT Academy, the winner for 2011. And he is, as you probably realised, from the UK, which is good. Let's bring things right up to date now, Jan, because, hey, you've won, fantastic. It doesn't stop there. In fact, in some respects, that was just the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was just a start. Me and the American winner, Brian, we've got a seven-month driver development programme. They're going to try and, well, they have got us from a complete novice to an international C driver's licence, racing license, so that allows me to race in other countries competitively.
That normally would be maybe a couple of seasons for most people. You would get up through the national ranks first and then get to the international ranks. How many races is it, and what time scale have you done it in?
I think it was, we needed 12 signatures, and we've done 12 races. It might have been 10 or 12 because we did brick car races and they count for, it was one race, but it was an endurance race, so they count for two signatures. We've done it in 6 weeks, I think. So,
because you've got no idea where you are at the moment, spinning between all these different circuits. I think I saw somewhere that you were doing sometimes two different races at two different circuits in the same weekend.
Yeah, that was true. Sometimes we were racing in one part of the country, then the next day we were racing in another part of the country. So it was pretty. It was really exciting. I liked it. It was sort of every weekend you had something really looking forward, something to look forward to. Racing a car on the track you've never been to. It was really exciting.
In some ways, given the accelerated program that you've had to have and the fact that you barely visited the same circuit twice, that you'd think, the main thing is, and I'm sure Bob Neville, RGN Motorsport, and all the guys at Nissan were saying, look, you know, never mind about the results, just get the signature. Never mind about the results, just get the signature. However, you being you, that wasn't going to be quite good enough. And how did you do in your first race weekends?
I think the first weekend I had was at Pembury, so a home track for me. I got a win that weekend and second or fourth, I think, in the three races that we did there. So, there at times, Bob... He says to me and Brian, okay, we just need the signatures, but sort of while you're racing, you want to beat everyone out on track. But Bob is sometimes in my mind sort of thinking, okay, Jan, just finish the race, bring the car home. So I do sort of take it on board and sort of be mechanically sympathetic to the car and just to bring it home, just to get those signatures.
Now, did you use the same car, the same type of car, all the way through all these races?
Yeah, the first couple of races, we had a car each, and leading up to brick car races, where we had one car and it was a two-hour endurance race, we used one car, and for those races, we did use Brian's car. Mm. They're exactly the same, so they're identical, so it was no different.
So you know the Nissan 370 race car pretty well now. It must feel like a second home to you, the amount of time you spent in it over the last few weeks.
Yeah, it feels pretty cool, sort of getting in the car and know exactly how it feels at certain corners and at low speed, what to do when it kicks out on you. So it did feel pretty at home.
Best race in that mad, manic few weeks?
I would say the last race we did weekend was at Rockingham, where I got a pole and two wins, so that was definitely the best weekend.
Now, is that just because of the results, or did you honestly feel as though that your driving and your sympathy with the car was at a level that you hadn't achieved before by then?
It was a bit of both. I wanted a couple of wins and I wanted a pole position, and I think I drove really well that weekend. I didn't really put a foot wrong that weekend, so I felt my performance overall was a lot better than the past performances, so that's why it was my best weekend.
So that's brought us right up to date with you in a very quick 40-odd minutes. We've condensed a few months into that. So, obvious question is, what next?
Next race is at Pembury this weekend, and it's the first time racing at a racetrack in a GT4 car, so a step up from the normal 370Zs with just a cage and slicks. A lot more power and non-servoed brakes, so it's a lot different to the other car we've been driving.
And what we haven't said, of course, is what you're aiming towards, which is a real challenge in the start of 2012.
Yes, the challenge is to just finish the Dubai 24-hour race and hopefully place well there. But my main personal goal is just to finish a 24-hour race.
Well, we'll catch up with you, I'm sure, before then. That's a race, by the way, you can hear in its entirety on RadioLeMond.com, because we'll be out there covering that race in the early part of 2012. Jan, congratulations on what you've achieved so far. I have a sneaking suspicion this might not be the last we hear from you.
Cheers. Thanks, John.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.